Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Cash Grab Cinema. This is Josh. Tonight, we're going back to the archives to bring you a classic episode. This one is on the 1988 cultural phenomenon of a film called Mac and Me. So sit back, relax, grab yourself a Coca-Cola and a Big Mac, and enjoy.
Welcome back to Cash Grab Cinemas. Where have we been, you ask? Super sick.
Yeah. Tonight, if you hear me say Ballard, I'm probably actually saying Mallard.
But you sound super sexy.
Thank you, yes.
Yeah, you got your sexy cold voice.
Yeah, I'm sounding like, I mean, it's really deep and
wonderful. You're like Phoebe from Friends when she got the cold.
Right.
Smelly cat, smelly cat. I don't want to sing any more than that. I don't know if I have to pay royalties.
Well, I was feeling more like a Robbie Benson from, you know, Beauty and the Beast. The real Beauty and the Beast.
Have you even seen the new one?
I haven't.
Me neither.
Yeah. I think that's...
Cash grab.
Do you?
Yeah, I do.
They made a lot of money.
They made a lot of money. What is it with... So Disney is going to be... Not to the sidebar, but Disney is going to be...
They did Cinderella,
mm-hmm.
Beauty and the Beast. I've heard tell of a live-action Mulan. I don't know how true that is. The Jungle Book. The Mulan one could be cool, has the potential to be cool.
I mean, if they do like a really artistic job, like in The Great Wall with Matt Damon.
Well, you know what? That everybody gives Matt Damon a lot of crap for that movie. It was a Chinese-made movie.
Right. He was just there.
Yeah. He's just like, oh, you're going to pay me? Cool. Where's my check? Do I pick that up here or around back?
It was really just an extended vacation that paid for itself.
Yeah. And he got to go to China, live in lap of luxury.
So...
I mean, I would do that. People act like, oh, Matt Damon, how could you? You'd do it.
Tonight, we're going to be delving into one of United States cinema history's greatest feats.
Wow.
I'm talking
You're
about...
You're really putting it on there.
I'm talking about the 1988 classic, Mac and Me.
The ripoff of E.T. you never wanted.
You well, never asked for, and you were sad when it happened.
Were you sad?
I don't remember. Honestly, this is the first time I've seen it. I didn't see it when it came... Or anywhere close to when it came out.
I never even heard of it, except for when... What's his name? Goes on Conan.
Oh, Paul Rudd.
Yeah, except for when Paul Rudd goes on Conan to plug a new movie he's in, but all he ever shows is the wheelchair scene from Mac and Me where the child flies off the side and falls into the water.
Yeah, we'll get to that. But yeah, so that was about my same introduction to the movie, and I've been really enjoying bad movies, so I figured, why not check this out?
You know what was awesome, though, about Mac and Me, before we start pooping on it?
Sure, yeah.
The main character...
Eric.
Eric. What's his real name?
I do not know what his real name is.
Doesn't matter. This is the only movie that he was in. I'm pretty sure that's correct. He is actually wheelchair-bound. I thought it was just a stunt or a gimmick for the movie. Like, look, our Elliot's wheelchair bound. But he genuinely is. And does it play a small part in the movie? Yes. But it's not overly mentioned. It's not made into a big deal. He's just in a wheelchair.
Right.
And I really liked that.
Yeah.
It was strangely inclusive for the 80s. In a time where everybody was scared of people who had disabilities.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, you're absolutely right. It was inclusive in a way without, like, you know, putting a giant highlighter over it and really pointing
out. Yeah, they weren't patting themselves on the back for being inclusive.
No.
It was just like, yeah, that kid's good, I guess.
Yeah. So, yeah, you're absolutely right. So, kudos to Mac and Me.
Good job, producer of Mac and Me, for that one thing. Everything else you did, you should be ashamed
of. Now, it should be mentioned that the actor, and I'm sorry I don't know his name, but the kid that played Eric, this was the only movie that he ever did, but he had some television roles as well. He was in a much beloved sci-fi show from the late 80s to the 90s called Alien Nation.
Was he in a wheelchair in that?
Yeah, yeah. Well, curious. He was walking.
No, I was just curious. Did it happen before the movie? Did it at some point in his life?
Oh, right.
Or was it something he was born with?
I want to say Mac and Me was his first thing, and then the other two things
were later.
Right. So
I was just wondering if it was like a South Park situation. Was he born disabled, or did he become disabled later on? Remember when Jimmy and Timmy accidentally joined the Bloods and the Crips?
Yeah, that was incredible. Well, the other show that the main character was in was one of my favorites as a kid. It was called Kids Incorporated, and it was this show about these kids that were singers.
What's the theme song of that again?
Kids Incorporated, K-I-D-S.
That's all I know of that show, because Josh sings it at the most random events.
But it soothes me. Yeah, they were kids, but they were also a corporation.
It's like Kids Bop, but a TV show.
But a TV show. They had their shit together. All right. Let's talk about how the movie opens. We don't start on Earth. We start on some unnamed planet out in the middle of nowhere. And
I don't know if this is true, but I read in a blog, it starts on a planet not in our solar system because of how you can, because of where the other planets are in relation when they look out into this. Into the sky, they can see some planets, but because of how they're relating to this planet that they're on, it can't exist within the solar system that we exist in. So in this fictitious world, NASA has created hyperdrive.
Okay, at the beginning of that, I'll be honest, I was just thinking like, oh my god, so what? Somebody on a blog put a star chart transparency over Mac and Me to find the place in the universe where it belonged. But then, I like the idea that NASA has just made a hyperdrive.
Yeah, and then lost it. Right. Because of this, they were just like, well, throw that crap in the trash. We don't need this to happen again. The lunar lander? I'm not sure what you'd call that thing, because it's definitely not a rover. But the lunar lander device lands down and immediately gets damaged several times, but doesn't stop it from lifting back up again. That's American know-how.
That's American. And what's funny about this is, so when it first lands, you don't really get to see any sense of a flag. But then there's a moment in the beginning part where Mac and his family sort of approach the lunar lander, or whatever you want to call it, and there's this giant American flag that's plastered on the side of it, which
damn right there is.
These colors don't run.
I like that the family drinks their water through a straw that they stab into the ground. Well, they don't show it's water. I'm assuming it's water. Stabs the straw into the ground, but they have no clothes, no dwelling, no other sort of infrastructure, nothing else, nothing except this damn straw.
Right. Yeah, it's like that's where their civilization stopped. What if they're not...
They got this straw and they're like, what else do you need?
What if they're not drinking water? What if each time they poke a straw into some rocks, it's puncturing the spinal cord of like an adorable bunny that lives underground and they drink its blood for essence?
Dude, are you messed up right now?
But just imagine, you know, maybe we're thinking they're too cute. And real quick, if we may, the alien design for
what
Mac
design?
And his, yeah, I don't. What is happening with how these aliens look?
After the movie was over, I tried walking around the house like how they walk with my hips thrusted super far forward. It hurts. So give it up to the actors in the Mac and Me outfits. You know their hips were hurting by the end of the day.
Their direction was, make everyone uncomfortable.
Got it.
But it's like this weird brown tan spandex with the strangest paper mache latex masks on that don't emote. There's no...
No.
You know, like E.T. might have been animatronic and like a puppet, basically, but he had emotion.
Yeah, and it's not like they were trying to set out to make E.T. cute. I mean, he kind of is, but I think in kind of that way that the really ugly dogs are cute, They didn't set out to make E.T. a nightmare. But in Mac and Me, I think they were so afraid of being seen as an E.T. copy. They tried to go in this totally different sea monkey-like direction.
Right.
But it's just disgusting. More than it's terrifying, more than it's cute, or more than any of that, it's just gross to me. And looking at those things, and nobody screams when they see him.
Right.
In E.T., the little girl, I can't remember the character's
Drew
name.
Barrymore. Drew Barrymore's character.
She screamed the first time she saw E.T. like any person would when you encounter something so foreign.
Right.
But nobody screams when they see the Mac and Me characters as they walk, like, hips thrusted out, so terrifyingly looking. I would scream. If they came to the South, I promise you they would not live very long.
So the family walks up to the lunar lander. They get sucked into a vacuum tube in very unbelievable CGI.
Very unbelievable.
Very unbelievable.
The machine breaks more, and then...
Because they're inside of it.
Yeah, and then they lift off and go to Earth, where they are put down in this, I'm guessing, Area 51 type place. And they start dismantling it, trying to find the rocks and all the things that the lunar lander collected. And they're like, oh, what's behind this panel? I don't know. Figure it out.
The other thing about this Area 51 is it looks totally like a studio backlot. It looks like just any old regular studio backlot. They didn't even try to dress it up to make it look like it was a military base. And even more so, there's these two bigwigs that show up in a helicopter on this backlot. And they're just, you know, like in a typical non-military helicopter.
Just a normal rental helicopter. I think it's blue.
It looks like the Maverick helicopter from Grand Theft Auto.
There were two, and maybe we're too nitpicky on this military stuff from living on a military base for so long, but there were two soldiers.
That's right. These colors don't run.
There were two soldiers guarding the Area 51 with just like a vomit of different uniforms.
Yeah.
Like the hat didn't go with the rest of their uniform. It didn't fit right. It's like beyond when somebody complains about like, oh, that guy shouldn't be wearing that badge. Just like that guy's wearing two different uniforms from different military branches.
They just went to a Salvation Army right before the shoot, and you know,
one guy's dad was a veteran, and another guy's dad was a veteran. Just hodgepodge it. They got it.
I feel like I've seen this kind of hat before in pictures.
Yeah,
I don't know.
In the Navy, fuck you.
As the scientists and NASA open up the lunar lander, all of a sudden they open up the wrong panel, and here comes Mac and all of his family. And what's weird is that they're powerful enough to basically, they don't destroy Area 51 completely, but they just blow shit up.
They do with their hands, just like, boom, exploded, boom, this, gone. And the weirdest thing to me is how easily they leave Area 51.
They really do.
If I know Area 51, and I think I do, I've watched Roswell, they would have been just gunned down, right?
Right. But no, like, basically, Mac distracts all the military people, but runs really quickly, so quicker than their bullets, even though he doesn't even run, like, he doesn't have any kind of natural movement. It's so clear that he's this terrible puppet.
Yeah, he's some sort of robot puppet, because they never show his legs running, and nobody's screaming as these creatures come out of this lunar module thing. They're just like, they look at him like, oh man, I'm kind of scared, but nobody's screaming. Nobody. None of the men, none of the women there, nobody. Nobody's scared enough to scream. I would be just in a corner like it's end of days crying.
Well, maybe these people, maybe they're just relying on their training, Rachel, and they're a
what
lot more
trained
stoic.
You to see that booger walking around?
And they're not doing anything. They don't
just
make
watch
any,
them leave.
Yeah,
like,
no
all right,
effort to contain them.
No, I'm trying to get fired.
You know what I love about this introduction to Mac and his family? Hmm. Is that, remember how E.T. started? Where E.T. basically sort of got lost in the woods, and there was a bit of a hot pursuit with him. And
The makers of this movie saw that, and they were like, we could do that.
Right, and they couldn't. They just said, screw it. You know what he does? Blows up Area 51.
And then he gets away. There's a car pile up, and I don't know exactly why they thought this was a good idea. It's very confusing because one little boy sees Mac, and you can see they have some sort of connection. But that's not the little boy that Mac ends up going with.
The little boy in question that... So, okay, first of all, as Mac is on his daring escape from Area 51, there's this moment where he's stuck to a fence and then gets stretched out like Stretch Armstrong.
Because of the helicopter blade's wind, I guess?
Somehow.
They don't explain really what's going on.
And then he pops off of the fence and you can see the bloody string that's coming off of what was holding him there. But then the car that he hits, the kid in it is Danny Cooksey, who many of you might remember as Budnick from Salute Your Shorts, the Nickelodeon show.
I still love that show.
Yeah, it was like circa Hey Dude, Salute Your Shorts. I love Hey Dude. Yeah, so Budnick. Budnick was in Mac and Me, which is pretty cool.
Yes, but that's not the kid he goes with. He ends up with the kid in the wheelchair, Eric, and his mom and his older brother.
Michael.
He climbs into their van, and Eric is drinking one of thousands of Coca-Colas that will be consumed during the course of this movie.
I don't know much about Eric, but I'll tell you this. The kid loves Coca-Cola. This movie brought to you by Coca-Cola.
And Skittles.
And Skittles. He loves Skittles.
Well, this is true. So because of E.T., Reese's Pieces saw a huge sale. Like a huge bump in their sales. Actually, the Hershey company makes Reese's Pieces. But because of E.T., so many people are like, gotta get some freaking Reese's Pieces and trap a freaking alien. This movie was like, well, we can't do Reese's Pieces. I know, Skittles. But unlike in E.T., there's not this like adorable moment where Mac finds the Reese's, like, oh, I'm in the Reese's. Ooh, piece of candy. Ooh, piece of candy. Nothing like that happens. Just this kid eats Skittles twice. Yeah. I don't know who the marketing team is on this movie. They don't know what they're doing.
I wonder if the director was like leaning down to the kid that played Eric, and Eric was like, "What's my motivation for this scene, director?" And the director's like, "Well, your character really likes Skittles, so we want to make sure that you're enjoying those Skittles. Keep them in your lap. Skittles.
Don't eat them.
Don't eat them." Because we're going to need more Skittles for other shots down the road.
No, I feel like what it actually was is, what's the motivation for my character right now? You don't want to get fired. Gotcha.
Eat the Skittles.
Like the kid at the laundromat.
So Mac ends up inside of Eric's mom's van.
Awesome van.
Awesome van.
With like mini blinds in the back.
They got a V-dub van again. It's pretty tight.
It's awesome. I would rock that.
This movie brought to you by Volkswagen. And when Mac steals Eric's Coke, it's not enough for Eric to just be like, what? Where'd my Coke go? He says, Mom, he took my Coke!
Yeah, they talk about the Coke until the end of the scene.
Yeah.
Which is just them, the kids falling asleep and the mom still driving to California, leaving Illinois, I believe. Is correct, right? They're going to their new life in California.
Or Illinois.
Well, name's Jeff. I like to correct people needlessly.
You think they went down through Missouri?
See what it's like? You can't even have a southern accent without other southern people mocking you for it. Fuck you.
So the mom drives all night. They end up in their new house in California. And real quick, first of all,
their new mansion in California.
Dude, I had this idea that houses in California were like pretty expensive.
Yeah, right? They are.
Yeah, so their mom gets this great new job that we don't hear a lot of details about, but it's a great new job, and almost like the Karate Kid, we sort of believe it, right?
Yeah.
Although Karate Kid was even more believable because it was a pretty working class job, because it's not like they improved so much. They were living in an apartment.
I feel like in kids' movies, you don't have to explain what the parents' jobs are. A child just accepts it.
Right.
I am fast approaching my mid-30s. I'm still not 100% sure what my mom does for a living. And she's been doing it for over 20 years.
Right. So they get there. There's this really interesting moment where Michael's helping Eric inside. And he sees the next door neighbor, Debbie.
Topanga, you mean?
Yeah, definitely Eric's Topanga.
Yeah. Boy Meets World Topanga. This is a model. Somebody from that TV show watched this movie and was like, well, this is garbage, but that little girl is cute. Topanga.
And then, as Michael's turning around, walking in the house, he's like, never fear, ladies of California. Your hormone king is here, or something. Hormone hero is what
hormone he said. Hormone hero. It was very weird. I know it was meant to be funny. It just felt made me feel weird.
Yeah.
Maybe it's because I'm an adult. And listening to a teenager talk about his sexual prowess is gross.
Like, dude, never seen a boob. Eric and Michael and their mom tour the new house, and they're astounded. It's huge, and it really is. It's huge. It's nice.
It's nice.
Very nice. And Eric is...
And they're definitely not living in the part of California that me and my family used to live in. Nobody's drive by and through there, unless they're throwing out newspapers.
Right. Eric's setting up his new room, and he's got this TV, and it's sort of this weird, almost introduction to Mac. There's a lot of teasing, right? There's a lot of teasing of the reveal of Mac to Eric.
It's weird how they're just like, I know, we'll make people think this boy's gone crazy.
Right, yeah.
They actually call in a doctor at one point to ask him about the quote-unquote little creature he keeps seeing.
The one thing I will say about this scene, as he's setting up his TV, is that the movie gives a shout-out to the Snorks, right? Remember the Snorks? Come along with the Snorks, right? And what I loved about this, and I'm sure I'm reading way too much into this movie at this point, but what I love about the fact that the show that he's watching is the Snorks, is that the Snorks was a ripoff of the Smurfs.
Yes.
Right? And kind of poorly done ripoff of the Smurfs. So in a way, it's almost this really self-aware nod to the fact...
They know about it. They know about their crap.
If it was an SAT question, it would be, the Snorks is to the Smurfs as Mac and Me is to E.T.
Also, before he sets up the TV, he pulls out... he's got his Skittles on his lap.
He sure does.
Pulls out a framed photo, and it's of him, his brother, his mom, and his dad. And he rubs the dad on the picture in a lovingly way and looks very sad. I don't know if they outright say it up until then. I don't think so. I think that comes later when they say the dad is dead. He died. And that's why they moved to California. And they never actually say, but I feel like it's alluded to, that the boy in the show, Eric in the movie, doesn't become wheelchair bound until his dad's dead. So I think, like, there was a car accident or something.
Oh, I see.
And that's why the mom is so concerned about him being comfortable in the house, having room to move his chair around easily. And she's always very worried about the hills in California. Don't go anywhere without me until we know which parts are safe for you and your chair.
Right. And let's give a little bit of a big ups to Christine Ebersole, who plays Janet the mom. She's a great character actor. She's been in a lot of comedy movies. She was the incumbent governor in the Chris Farley, David Spade vehicle, Black Sheep. She's been in a lot of movies. She's really funny.
She's the only person from this movie I recognized.
Right. Well, almost the only person you recognized, but we'll get to that down the road. Or talk about it now.
I don't know what you're talking about.
The other person you might have recognized is one Mr. Ronald McDonald.
Oh, right.
But we'll talk about him down the road.
But he has his frame. He puts it out. He gets the TV. Before he can plug it in, though, There's an electrical surge from Mac, and the TV turns on. And he calls his mom, and like, Mom, look at this crazy stuff. And the TV goes off. And she's like, good for you, sweetie. And then leaves.
Right.
But there's so much of this, like, teasing. I honestly feel like it's a waste of time to talk about it.
Right. It takes up so much. It's really like they were trying to fill the feature-length running time. And they decided the best way to do this was to just really stretch out this first act.
We are over 30 minutes into the movie, and they're still going like, what's that? What's happening, Eric?
At about the 30-minute mark, this is when the famous wheelchair scene, wheelchair going down the hill scene happens, the one that Paul Rudd keeps playing on Conan. And the interesting thing about this is that, you know, if you're buying a house and you have a child that is in a wheelchair, why would you pick a house that has a backyard with a, not just a gentle, but a steep slope?
That goes straight into a water-filled ravine?
Yeah, straight into a murder ravine where you throw your bodies. Like, that's what it is. And it's so strange that it seems like it was bound to happen.
That's what she wanted. She knew what she was doing.
It's dark.
Here's another thing I want to point out. As a person who is not wheelchair bound myself, so this is all just speculation on my point. Please correct me if I'm wrong. But in the Olympics, in the Paralympics, there are people swimming in the Paralympics that don't have full use of their legs or zero use of their legs. And they're winning gold medals and shit, swimming with their arms. Why does this kid immediately start drowning?
Well, it's weird because when... Okay, so he falls in the water. Matt goes in and saves him with alien magic or whatever. And when he pulls him out of the water, he's still in the chair. Almost as if he's, strapped in.
Maybe he was strapped in. But later on, he wants to, like, inspect something that's down on the ground. So he just easily gets himself out of the chair.
Right.
But he's not strapped in then. Is that because he's inside and he doesn't need to be strapped? I don't know.
Yeah.
But it just seems like lazy filmmaking to me.
Not long after the tumble down the ravine and the miraculous saving by one Mac, we meet yet again, we see Debbie again, but now we meet her older sister, Courtney.
Who works at McDonald's. If you want to watch, you should watch this movie if for no other reason. You will see the nicest fitting McDonald's outfit that has ever been invented. As a person who worked at McDonald's, no McDonald's uniform fits that well. They don't make them like that.
If you're going to put it in a movie, you want it to look
tip-top. In this movie, harking back to The Seeker, which was in our first podcast, why do the parents in these movies leave their children alone with doctors all the time that they've never met?
It was a different time. This is the time before the kind of hover parenting that we have now.
No, it's not hover parenting. Do you take your kid to the doctor and then leave? Like, go ahead, you got it.
Yeah.
I don't need to know any of this stuff.
I saw a magazine out in the lobby that I really want to check out.
That 1998 back issue of Southern Gentleman isn't going to read itself. I don't even know if that's a real magazine. I just made that up.
Courtney has to get to work at McDonald's, which we know because she's wearing her McDonald's gear.
And then Eric's older brother goes, hey, cool McDonald's. Like, what? I'll come by later for a Big Mac. Who says specifically what they're going to McDonald's for?
I don't know. It's
funny you just wait till you get there to see how much you hate yourself that day?
I want to imagine that Ronald McDonald was just off screen feeding him lines. Yo, with, Michael, say...
With the makeup on.
With the makeup on, yeah. Michael, go over to her and say, oh, I can't wait to go and get a Big Mac and a large fry and a strawberry milkshake.
When was this movie made?
1988.
I'm surprised they weren't pushing the Big Tasty.
Was the Big Tasty even out then?
What was that one where it came in the big styrofoam tray and they put one half of the sandwich on one side and the other half of the sandwich on the other and then you put them together George Costanza made a singing commercial about it. Look that up. It's on YouTube.
Oh, that's true. That might have been in the 80s. Good, yeah. Good call. Good catch.
Ask her about the special sauce, Michael.
Well, the one thing I'll say is move over, E.T., with your silly, tired, and frankly, dumb Reese's Pieces gimmick. Eric knows how to really attract an alien. What you do...
You call over the neighbor girl,
you get some Coca-Colas, some Dixie Cups, and some bendy straws, and you proceed...
And you bait that house.
You proceed to set up a trail of Dixie Cups and bendy straws and Coca-Cola. It's so weird.
And what do you trap them in? Not a box.
No.
A vacuum cleaner. How did he know that this vacuum cleaner would suck up Mac? Because he had seen him, and he knows roughly what size he is. They actually don't ever really make it clear in the movie, because they never show him standing next to something you could readily measure.
Right.
So I'm guessing a medium-sized dog.
Sure, yeah. Like, maybe 2.5, 3 feet tall.
Oh, I know how to get rid of that dog. Josh, go get my vacuum.
I just like the idea that the NASA scientists who designed the lunar lander and Eric both watched the same cartoons growing up. So that was the physics that they were basing that on. What's really strange about when Eric sucks up Mac into the vacuum cleaner is that if you remember in E.T., you know, there was a much gentler sort of official introduction between Elliot and E.T.
Yes. And even though Elliot did seem kind of scared of E.T., scared in like a this is new and different way, not terrified, just nervous, it was still a semi-gentle approach. In this movie, they're like, forget that. We're going to try to kill this freaking alien.
Right. It was really, really violent. And it's almost like Eric had instant regret as soon as he vacuumed him up. Like, he vacuumed him up. He's like, oh, shit. What do I do?
Yeah. I think I killed him. Well, he wasn't wearing the vacuum cleaner. The next door neighbor Topanga character was. The Topanga-like character. She vacuumed him up. And just like how you could see the string earlier when Matt got stretched out at the fence.
Like Stretch Armstrong? Yeah. This movie brought to you by Stretch Armstrong.
You could clearly see the track that they used to take the doll that they made in the same size as the little girl. So they turn on the vacuum. The vacuum cleaner goes along the bottom of the track, up the side of the wall, over the roof, down the wall again. You know it's a doll. Because her head slams onto the ground and, like, breaks her neck if it was a real person.
No, that actually, that's one of the tragedies of the production, actually, is she did die in that scene. But luckily, the actors were twins, so...
It's a blessing.
There was a backup.
Yeah. But he's instantly sad, like, oh no, what have I done? He jumps out of his wheelchair. His brother is there. They get Mac, they put the vacuum in reverse, they get Mac out of there, and then...
What do they use to revive
him? Thank the heavens, they have life-giving Coca-Cola to give to him. Every time these aliens are injured, they give them Coca-Cola. I have seen branding in a movie before, we all have, but to go so far in a children's movie to tell little kids that Coca-Cola can save your life.
Yeah.
That's extreme.
Well, it answers the question of what Mac and his family were drinking out of rocks. They were drinking liquid candy bars. Eric's mom, the next morning, has to go to work, and she has Michael take her there. And what's interesting is,
before she leaves, though, they're both trying to convince her of the little creature. And now that the older brother is on board, the mom is like, well, maybe it exists. Because the older brother and the mom have a very strange relationship.
Yeah, they do. There's a real, like, the older brother is trying to fill some sort of void.
Yes.
And by doing so, maybe goes over the line a little bit.
Right. It's never... gross.
It's never sexual.
No.
It's always just like
weird.
Like he's trying to he's trying to be the big man of the house, mm-hmm. and his delivery of it is very
odd. It's off. Yeah, it's odd. Not saying that if it wouldn't actually happen in real life, if his dad really did die, I'm sure he would feel obligated to fulfill that role. The character just doesn't know how to do it. The actor playing the character just doesn't know how to do it.
Yeah, it comes off as just awkward.
Yeah, which is good. I mean, that's a good thing he doesn't know how to do it. His dad's not dead. But still, it's just weird.
We're nearly an hour into the film, and even though Eric and Mac have had a lot of interactions, they haven't really formed that bond yet. There's still like a standoffishness between them. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and then but then when the bond is formed, it's immediate.
Right.
Immediately, they're hanging out, chilling, sitting in the same chair. It's just kind of odd how quickly, how slowly it happened, how painstakingly long it's taken the movie to get there, and then how quickly it happens once it gets there.
Right.
And at this point, we do discover what the mom does, her great, new, fantastic job that let them buy a mansion in the Hollywood Hills. That's right. Sears.
Yeah, she works at Sears. Now, it's never really specified what she does. She could be like a really top-level executive. But there's also a mention that the mom hasn't worked in like a decade.
Yeah.
And it's weird to think that you could be out of the game for 10 years and then just go back and be baller.
Even be a manager.
Right.
I thought, honestly, when the older son dropped her off at Sears, I thought they meant she got a cashier job.
So I think it's somewhere in between. Like, somewhere in between. She's middle management at best.
I love how in-depth we're getting with her Sears job.
Well, you know what? It's the movie's fault, because they make a whole lot of effort to remind us that she works at Sears. This movie brought to you by Sears.
Yes, they do. They actually have a chase scene through the Sears.
Yeah.
At one point.
You see the sign several times in the movie.
Yes. Yeah. And they do, after you see it the first time, they mention it a lot. So while Mac is struggling to find his family is also struggling to find them. And all the while, the FBI, I'm assuming that it's the FBI or the CIA, are looking for Mac. Why? Why are they going after Mac? The family's just wandering in the desert. Are they really that hard to find?
And not just wandering. It's not like they're still nimble or whatever. They're dying. They are like thirsty.
They haven't had Coca-Cola the whole time they've been on this planet.
So, yeah, if they don't get some high fructose corn syrup in liquid form.
Soon?
Yeah.
It's going to be curtains.
Yeah.
And they call to each other by holding their hands up in a V, but in the most awkward V, like their hands never fully come together, their fingers aren't quite doing it right, because, ooh, they're aliens. It's so lame.
Yeah, and they do this, like, prayer whistle thing.
Yeah, I can do it, but... Yeah.
Well, the V is actually to because of their sponsor of Vlasic Pickles.
And they never keep their heads still. They're just always waving and bobbing, but Mac's head doesn't do that. It's always perfectly still.
This is true. I don't know who designed the aliens, but yeah, the movements that they exhibit are, well, they're totally alien, so maybe that's what they were going for.
Maybe, but it's not alien in a kids movie cutesy kind of way. It's genuinely off-putting.
Right. It certainly is.
Can I just say, to be annoying, around the hour, we're an hour into this movie, by the way. At the hour mark, Eric and his mom go for a jog. Well, he goes for a roll, I guess. And the mom is going for a jog.
Jesus Christ.
Why is she not wearing a sports bra? This is a kids movie. Do we really need to see her boobies bounce that much? Also, as a woman, do you know what's super, super uncomfortable? Running without a sports bra. Not because I'm worried that people are looking at my boobs bouncing around. Look all you want, whatever. It hurts.
Yeah.
So they're on their jog, boobs a-flopping, and Mac feels, I don't know, maybe a little forgotten. He gets one of those toy, what do you call them?
Like an RC car?
It's not an RC car, though. It's one of those kids.
Like a Power Wheel.
Yes.
So this movie brought to you by Power Wheels.
So Mac, feeling a little left out, jacks a Power Wheels car from the neighbor and chases after them like, hey, wait for me. Every dog in the neighborhood is hell-bent on killing this abomination
that is Mac. Well, if you were a dog and you saw this booger man go by, I mean, you'd want to kill it too, right? But what's so funny about this is he's on the Power Wheel, he goes over this cliff, he lands in a tree, and immediately this really overly sentimental song starts playing.
I believe the lyrics say something like, I know you won't leave me behind, as they jog past him left in the tree.
The music, I mean, this is one of the first really good examples, but the music cues in this movie are so off. Like, they happen at the weirdest times. Mm-hmm. They're not matching the tone of the mm-hmm. scene that they're attached to. And it's just so weird.
I get the impression what they did was went through a Rolodex of songs they could afford and just picked them at random.
Right.
Like, I need a 3-minute song here. Gotcha.
How many songs are in the Sears catalog?
Yeah.
They're paying for this anyway. I'm sure they'll be fine with it. I know you won't leave me behind, but listen to me sing more about our relationship while we have 2.5 minutes of a montage of you and your mom jogging. It's so weird.
That song is available for anybody needing some music.
I do ringtones. We don't have time to worry about Mac in the tree and the weird song that's playing in the background, because we go straight into another scene where Eric is getting ready to go to the greatest birthday party ever! He's going to go with Debbie, and guess where they're heading? That's right.
McDonald's.
Yep, they're going to have the greatest of birthday
parties. I never went to a McDonald's birthday party as a kid, but I do remember McDonald's used to have birthday parties.
Oh, yeah.
That was a real thing.
Of course it was a real thing. It was a huge thing. The late 80s, early 90s, it was a great time to be a parent, because you could get away with going to a super cheap fast food restaurant and having the whole party take place there. It was incredible.
As a parent of a child of the right age that has birthday parties and invites his friends, can we do that?
No.
Dang it. Those parties are expensive. But before he leaves for the birthday party, two guys come and ask him, oh, you know, we're just wondering about the power surge that happened the other day. Because when they sucked up Mac in the vacuum cleaner, it cut the power to their neighborhood. Because Mac, in his electrical power, cut all the power.
Right.
For, I think, like 5 or 6 minutes.
Because he's extremely dangerous and needs to be murdered by these NASA guys.
Exactly. And they come and they ask Eric's mom, you know, what do you know about that? So they know there are people looking for him and they're after him. And Mac's sick and sad. And they can't just leave him alone. They give him the Coke, but it's not working. They can't just leave him alone, but they have to go to this party. Well, what are they to do?
They try to offer him the Coke, and he basically looks like he's having some sort of seizure. It's really messed up. He's all, like, convulsing. I just like, no more, I'm fine.
I just need some water, man. Like, in the toilet?
So what is Eric and Debbie's genius plan? They decide to throw Mac into a giant, like, the skin of a murdered teddy bear. And somehow or another, Mac becomes even more creepy. Because for the first time, he's actually moving.
Yeah, all up until then, you know that Mac is some sort of animatronic, possibly puppet, not made by the Jim Henson Corporation, because I don't think they would make a monster that hideous. But when they put him in the teddy bear, he grows, and it's clearly a little person inside of a teddy bear costume.
Or a kid. It could be a kid. It could be a kid.
I'm just guessing little person because of the dancing. It's just so on point.
Oh my goodness, yes.
They're at the party. the McDonald's party of the year with Ronald McDonald's there. I mean...
Well, everybody knows he resides in California, so... I mean, they just happen to live next to that particular McDonald's where Ronald McDonald lives all the time.
Here's another worthless complaint on my part. There are so many continuity errors in this movie.
Yes.
The cups at the party are clearly empty. The McDonald's cups have no soda in them. When they touch down on the table, you can hear them. You can hear how empty they are. One of them falls over and nothing spills out of it. Just the kid picks it up real quick. Why didn't they just cut that out or reshoot it? Like, it would have taken no time. You're only about 2 minutes into this party. Then they show Mac in his bear costume. You're right, it probably is a kid. In the bear costume. And they close up on the eyes. And how they had to cut out the bear eyes so Mac can see. And I, again, very nitpicky on my part. It's very reminiscent of other movies you see with the eyes cut out in pillow sheets.
It's really, really creepy. It really is. I wonder if the empty cup situation is due to like a contractual thing with Coca-Cola. Like, if it ain't in a Coke can, there ain't nothing there.
Maybe
we refuse to accept that there are other modes of drinking.
Maybe, but McDonald's exclusively sells Coke products. So your logic is slightly flawed there. Nice one.
Still.
And then the dance party of the century happens. All the tables are mysteriously gone. All the kids know the dance routine. Ronald McDonald is like, yeah, go kids. And there's...
Well, this was 1988, and it was a different time. This was a time when McDonald's were designed big enough to accommodate large dance parties. Yeah.
Exactly. Like, even when they pull up into the parking lot, there's a group of kids, a group of teenagers dance partying in the parking lot. If I were to pull up to McDonald's and there was a group of kids breakdancing in front of the door, I would just leave.
Yeah, I would just keep driving.
Yeah. She was like, never mind.
Noticeably F-A-T, drop us a beat.
Yeah. I would just leave.
And they do this really weird dance where they like pat their stomach and stuff. And I want to say that that was probably like a note that came from a McDonald's executive. Like, well, when the kids are having their dance party, maybe they do like the McDonald's dance. Like, you know, in Teen Wolf where they had the wolf dance. You know, it would be the McDonald's dance. Ugh.
And then the FBI comes and ruins these kids' dancing time. The dance is inside, it's outside, it's taking up the whole parking lot.
I mean, there's like easily 200 kids at this party.
Yeah.
How popular is this kid?
Very. How is it that these five highly trained adults can't capture one bear-costumed monster during this dance party?
One thing I'll say is that this chase scene that happens with Eric and Mac escaping from these pretty incompetent FBI agents is that it's such a blatant ripoff of E.T.
Yes. Everything instead of a bike, he has his wheelchair. They bust through a clothesline at one point, and Matt gets a scarf of some kind stuck on his head. He looks just like E.T. in Elliot's basket.
Big ups to the stunt double, though, because there was this one moment where the wheelchair came so close to this car.
I thought they were going to smash head into it. And you can tell it's real. It's legit.
Yeah.
These are practical effects right now.
Yeah.
That person could have died to make Mac and me, of all things.
It was really exciting, and it was skillfully done, but still not enough to take away from the fact that it made no bloody sense.
No.
None.
It was so unnecessary. Such an unnecessary move. And then, here is, during this chase, and he grabs onto a truck, gets to the Sears, and whips into the door. This is where the Sears chase down happens.
I was really, you know what, I was really expecting different things from this scene by the time, so by the time we're at this point in the movie, I expect them to walk into, you know, to go into Sears, and that in every shot, you would see, you know, some sort of really brightly lit, easy to recognize logo or brand name or something like that. And they showed a lot of restraint. They actually didn't do that during
this chasing. Yeah, you see the Sears logo at the front of the door. The lady, the mom, has a Sears name badge on. And there is some Sears labeling, but that's about it.
Yeah, it was actually not so bad.
Yeah. I mean, as someone who used to manage part the jewelry department of Kmart, which is Sears owned, you could tell it's a real Sears.
Yeah.
So the kids now know Mac has been leaving them clues of where his family has been. They take the van, they get Mac, they get Eric, and Mac during the chase from these police officers.
It was a pretty stunning event, and especially because it was fine to understand that Mac could sort of like jump in the van. Because
Mac is like the medium sized dog.
Yeah, he's little, but then the Michael, who's maybe 16,
to suspend all disbelief.
He just strong arms Eric in his wheelchair completely into the van as it's going, I don't know, 30 miles an hour or something.
They never tap the brakes.
No.
Just like, keep going.
Yeah, he's incredibly strong.
In reality, what would happen is he would go to pick him up, they would both fall out and get crushed by the van. Yeah.
They would be dead. They go out to the desert, somewhere near a bunch of these...
There's a wind turbine farm, which is one of the clues. And then another clue is horses. They pass a group of wild horses. Actually, pretty beautiful shot, but it's cheating. Wild horses are always beautiful.
Yeah, it is. And it's a really weird scene with the horses riding beside the van as they go. And you're like, why... Did the horses understand? Are they in tune with nature? I don't know, you know.
A van is much faster than a horse.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
Don't get me wrong, horses are fast, but not that fast. So they find an old mine. The older brother goes in there and finds all the aliens, but they're not doing so good.
They're on the verge of death. It looks like they're dead.
It's so creepily lit.
Yeah.
They look terrifying. It genuinely freaked me out.
They're not moving. They look completely dead.
They do. I was waiting for a jump scare. For those of you who hate jump scares, it doesn't happen. You can watch it. But this whole time I thought, definitely going to be a jump scare. Thank goodness they have two cans of life-giving Coca-Cola.
Oh, thank you so much, Coca-Cola, for giving me this life. It's incredible. Yeah, they shove some Coca-Cola down these aliens' throats, and that's all they needed.
But they only have two cans of Cokes and three aliens. So the adult male alien, he's not doing as well as the kid and the mom alien.
Right.
He has a mini freak out. They get their four alien companions now into the van. And the dad alien is still, I don't know, having a temper tantrum?
I don't know, yeah. He really wants to sort of do what he wants to do, and he's not listening to anybody.
Yeah. Typical man.
Typical man. They go, yeah, he takes his toxic masculinity into a local...
Cut that. They stop to get gas and more Coca-Cola. The dad, not being patient, leaves, goes to a grocery store to get his own Coca-Cola. This escalates from 0 to 100 so quickly.
He's just getting some Coca-Cola. All of a sudden, there's a security guard with a gun.
With a gun. I have never been to a grocery store with a security guard that had a gun. Finger on the trigger. He's been waiting to kill a booger alien.
So all of a sudden we have a standoff situation. There's cops. There's an alien that doesn't understand gun technology that's holding a gun.
Because he steals the gun from the incompetent grocery store security guard. Eric's brother, he's trying his best to defuse it. They're not going to hurt you. They're not going to hurt you. As the alien has a gun and waving it around. So the aliens they start leaving the grocery store with their Coca-Cola spoils. And everybody's just like, no, don't hurt them. They won't hurt you. And Eric, I can save them, wheels over. One officer falls and trips while makes his firearm goes off. The alien turns and immediately starts not shooting his gun, just brandishing it. And all the officers open fire. Yeah, because that's what would happen.
And the entire strip mall explodes. Everything explodes.
Gas isn't that volatile, is it?
I mean, if you have tons and tons and tons of it.
I guess. Because the aliens are going towards the gas station, which is where the van was.
That must be what it is.
Yeah, and all the bullets maybe hit the gas tanks.
Sure.
But or it the blew gas up, pumps.
It blew up everything.
It did. It was a comically huge explosion. Eric really isn't that close to it, but spoiler alert, it kills him.
Yeah, he dies.
Yeah.
Eric dies, which was a real shocker to me.
His brother had been detained by the officers for trying to defend the aliens. And then as soon as his brother's dead, they so unceremoniously open the cop car door. They're like, I guess you can go.
Yeah.
We killed your brother, so you're free.
I'll let you off with a warning.
But I don't understand why Debbie's sister's so sad about Eric dying.
Courtney?
Yeah. Why is she so tore up about it?
Well, there was a lot of time as they were heading out to the desert to find Mac's family. You don't know.
So in that 30 minutes, they formed that kind of connection?
Eric is very charismatic. I don't know if you picked up on that, but I did. But the weird thing is, so Eric is totally dead. He's dead, and he's dead for like a good 4 minutes. His brother's upset, Courtney's upset, Debbie's upset, Courtney's really upset. Mm-hmm. And then his mom comes along, and obviously she's very, very upset. But then...
So Mac and his family, they have, at this point, consumed enough Coca-Cola.
Life-giving.
That they're able to transfer this life-giving energy to Eric through their hands by touching him.
Yeah. So they bring him back to life. And you know, it's such a lame... Because, you know, again, let's go back to E.T., right? And E.T., Elliot and E.T., they became... sort of linked. They had this symbiotic sort of existence where anything that E.T. felt, Elliot felt too, and they could sort of telepathically. And so when E.T. got sick, Elliot got sick, right? Mm-hmm. So...
And it was real. The emotion was real when he thought E.T. was dead.
Yes.
It was real. It was genuine. That child actor, superb. If you've not seen his audition tape...
Yeah, dude.
Take the time to watch it on YouTube. It's so good.
His name is Henry... I'm blanking on his name, but it's Henry.
He was amazing. And I feel like that's what they wanted in this movie, the same tearjerker moment, this genuine emotion feeling. Because you don't get it that often in kids' movies. You get manufactured ones, and that's what this one gives you.
Yeah, absolutely. It seems so weak. Fake. Yeah, it seems so weak. So weak. But then... Mac's dad, who I'm guessing was a general practitioner back on their home planet, he
invented the straw.
Yeah, he did. He invented the straw. They were rich, which is why they didn't have a house. He brings Eric back to life, and then we jump cut to later on in the future when... Surprise, surprise to everybody, because honestly, I thought that...
This is not what I thought was going to happen.
Yeah, I thought that Mac and his family would return to their planet where they would be more comfortable, where they could whistle forever and drink water from stones with bendy straws.
Right.
And that ain't what happens.
No, because they got to taste that sweet, sweet Coke life, and they're like, oh, hell no. I ain't going nowhere. I'm going to live here. Where the Coca-Cola is.
And not just here on Earth.
He became a Coca-Cola brand ambassador.
He must have been. Not just here on Earth, but here in the United Effin' States, my friends. Because the next scene, it smash cuts to a citizenship ceremony where Mac and his family are
becoming... And a bunch of other new Americans.
Right.
Are being sworn in. They're taking... They're saying their little oath. They're becoming full-fledged American citizens. And normally, for me, I typically, like, can't watch those videos. I can't, like, see those pictures unless I want to cry. Because it's just, like, so touching and beautiful. Yeah. Because it takes a lot to become an American citizen. If I wasn't born in America, I don't know if I could do it. It's so hard.
Yeah.
It's so hard. So to see people actually accomplish it, I'm just, like, overwhelmed with pride for them. And this cheapens it. It cheapens it so much. Why the hell would these aliens care about becoming American citizens other than the Coca-Cola?
It's all about the Coca-Cola.
Yeah. I think that's what it is. At that part where you said, where the judge asks, do you renounce your ties to all other foreign countries and allegiances and all that, Mac's family was just like, well, the only thing I pledge my love to is Coca-Cola.
That was enough. It's a really sort of like... It's a moment of, I think...
Why are they dressed so Leave It to Beavery as well?
Right.
The aliens.
That's what I'm saying. I think it's a moment of real cultural imperialism, if I may. You know, mm-hmm. It's a real, like, oh, look, Mac and his family, it was a happy ending for them after all. Because they got to be the best thing that you could possibly be. American citizens and consumers of products like Coca-Cola and Sears and Skittles.
Hooray! Why are the FBI agents there? Like, they're comically late, running, like, you know, we're gonna miss it. And then one of them's, like, clapping at the end how beautiful it is. Like, weren't you just trying to kill them and put them in a cage not one scene ago?
Rachel, this is how, in a children's movie, we know that everything's cool and always shall it be. Because everybody's been turned around to the correct way of thinking. Not that these alien creatures are monsters that need to be shot in the face, but that they're amazing.
Also, and this will just color my ignorance more, I thought to become a full-fledged American citizen, you had to speak English. I'm not sure at what kind of level, but I thought you had to be somewhat an English-speaking person.
They can't speak human.
Exactly. All they do is whistle. How are they becoming American citizens?
Look, Rachel, he can bring people to life with the power of Coca-Cola.
And then Eric rolls up and tries to give Mac a handshake, but the robot can't figure out how to do that, so instead he just hugs him, like, eh, whatever.
It's so very awkward. It's so weird. And you can tell everybody here is just happy that it's over.
Now all they have left is the nightmares.
At the very end, we see Mac and his family driving into the sunset in their brand new pink Cadillac.
They heard that Clash song and they were like, yes, please.
This movie brought to you by Cadillac. But it's such a weird way to end it, and it's such a really...
Also, is the alien dad really driving this Cadillac? Because can they actually see out of these costumes? I mean, he does. He drives onto the highway. And then it says, we'll be back in pink bubblegum.
Yeah.
They were so convinced this was going to be another E.T. smash hit that they were already planning the sequel. Mac and Me, the sequel ideas, go. Josh, what do you got?
Okay, in the sequel, oh man, you really put me on the spot. In the sequel, Mac is older. Mm-hmm. Say he's about the age that Eric was in the first Mac and Me. And then, all of a sudden, a human shows up at his house... And he doesn't know how to tell his folks. No, that doesn't make sense. That's stupid.
Alright, no, you're wrong. Here it is. The second Mac and Me movie. An intergalactic police force comes to Earth to arrest Mac's dad. Because it turns out he stole the bendy straw idea. And when he left the planet, he took all the bendy straws they had left.
And in order to fight for his freedom, Mac's dad is going to have to get some Smith & Wesson guns, some Winchester ammunition, some Ozark Trails tents, because he's going to have to go out in the woods and go Rambo style, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And some Pepsi Clear. Crystal Pepsi.
He switched brands.
He did.
So, I think it sort of goes without saying, but here we are at the end of the podcast. Is this movie a cash grab or not?
Well, Josh, can you remind us, and anybody who might still be listening after this, what's a cash grab?
A cash grab is any work of art that is made solely for to make money and not for artistic merit. This can be music, movies, books, anything. But it's made to make money, not as an artistic expression.
So, Mac and me, is it a cash grab? Let me answer that question with a yes. Normally, I have more to say than that, but it's so blatantly a cash grab. The Skittles and the Coca-Cola, that's just trying to make them money. And then the fact that it came biting on the heels of E.T. success.
I mean, there was...
There's so many E.T. ripoffs in this movie. Scenes.
The family dynamic. The mother with the two... The single mom with two sons.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And then the fact that they... Before the dust even settled, they were already planning a sequel.
Yeah, right. They were trying to cash in. Cha-ching. Mm-hmm. And you didn't mention to me what was the most...
Cash grab.
...thing of this movie. Was that there was like an 8 to 12 minute scene that took place in a McDonald's.
Oh, right. And there's that as well.
I mean, it's
with the actual Ronald McDonald of that time.
I mean, Ronald McDonald did a... You can find it on YouTube. There is a promo for Mac and Me done by Ronald McDonald himself. So, I mean,
if that's not a cash grab...
I mean, this is product placement on a par with Return of the Killer Tomatoes. In that scene with George Clooney. And that other guy, where they're literally just pulling out, oh, is everything okay? Here, have some aspirin. Oh, man, I'm hungry. Have some Frosted Flakes or a Snickers. And they were, like, making fun of it. But that's what Mac and Me tried to get away with doing seriously.
Yeah. Yes, they did. And they did not succeed. We would like to send out a super special shout-out to Dashing Digressions. Awesome podcast. If you guys haven't heard it, check it out. Find them on Twitter under that same name, Dashing Digressions. They have just finished riding out Hurricane Harvey. I'm happy to report they're doing great. They're back on their cast. Super good. Check it out.
Do you want to hear more from Cash Grab Cinema?
Who wouldn't?
Everybody wants to know about us. So be sure to go over to Instagram and follow us at CashGrabCinema and over to Twitter, where you can also follow us at CashGrabCinema. Do you want to know more?
please, tell me more.
There you go, like an infomercial.
Mm-hmm.
You can now click on our link tree, and it'll take you anywhere you want to go.
Wait, slow down, Rachel. Tell me something.
Mm.
These... weird website-y sort of names for things that I don't recognize or understand. Can they be downloaded in app form?
No. you delightful idiot. But if you want to buy...
Do you experience it as a sort of vapor?
Don't interrupt me when I'm talking. Do you want to buy us from something from our Amazon wish list to help the show?
Mm.
Click the link tree!
I desperately need rollerblades.
I don't know if the link tree could help you that with that.
Shucks.
We'll add rollerblades to our Amazon wish list. What? Don't forget to follow us at Cash Grab Cinema.